Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Can someone who identifies as homosexual or as transgender really be a conservative? What is conservatism based upon? Has the conservative movement begun to embrace the homosexual movement? If so, what are real conservatives supposed to do? My guest today is Laurie Higgins. She's with the Illinois Family Institute. Thanks, Laurie, for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me, Diane.
So what do you guys do there, and what do you do specifically?
Well, Illinois Family Institute is a public policy organization, and we embrace Judeo-Christian values. We work for, you know, having policies and practices and laws embrace, or at least not violate, conservative principles. And I write myself, I write a lot about issues related to homosexuality and gender dysphoria.
And those are definitely hot topics the past number of years, even more so now. The transgender issue is really up there front and center. And you wrote an article dealing with Milo, and there's no way I'm going to attempt to pronounce his last name. We'll just call him Milo. I'm not sure.
I think it's easier. I think it's just Yiannopoulos.
Okay, that's good. I will call him Milo. You can call him whatever you want to.
Okay.
Anyway, you wrote an article dated the 21st of February dealing with the fact that he had been invited to speak at CPAC. And because of some statements he had made in the past about man-boy love, CPAC finally disinvited him. But what was your contention about just the fact that CPAC had invited this individual? Who is a flamboyant homosexual? I'll throw that out there.
Right. He's very flamboyant, and he talks a lot about, I mean, some things that I can't even say, mm-hmm. but references to his preferred sexual practices. And he should never have been invited to CPAC. He doesn't represent conservative values. Now, people have said to me, oh, well, you know, what do you have to endorse or affirm in order to belong to the Republican Party? Well, you can, you know, I mean, if those who choose to identify by their same-sex attraction want to be in the Republican Party, that's fine. But there should be an expectation that they affirm conservative values,
right,
which is not the legalization or the legal recognition of same-sex unions as marriages. They're not marriages. Marriage has a nature central to which is sexual differentiation. It cannot include people who are celebrating their homosexual identity and want practices and policies that affirm those views also. But the real debate with Milo Yiannopoulos, it was two interviews in which he said that sex between a young pubescent boy and an adult male isn't, number one, it's not pedophilia because the boys are sexually mature, and it's not necessarily destructive. It can be affirming and loving and good for them in terms of figuring out their own identity. Now, there were a lot of people, I was surprised, conservatives who got angry with me and said that
to his defense.
They came to his defense. Number one, saying that relationship, he has renounced pedophilia. But if they listen carefully, what he said was that pedophilia is sex between children who are not yet sexually mature and adult males, and he rejects that. But and he is technically accurate.
Mm-hmm.
There are these, you know, distinctions that I guess experts in the mental health field make, and also homosexuals do, between pedophilia, ephebophilia, and hebephilia,
yeah.
which is just these different ages
mm-hmm.
of attraction.
Right.
And so he was technically saying, and he's correct, that pedophilia is prepubescent, and he objects to that. The question is, does he vociferously reject sex between sexually mature, his word, teens and adults? And it's unclear whether he rejects that. What the public doesn't know, many in the public, is that his stated belief earlier in two different interviews that pederasty, which, you know, would be sex between sexually mature teenagers
older,
and men.
Like teenage boys.
Exactly.
Males,
that's
males.
A commonly held belief among homosexual men that pederasty is neither immoral nor destructive, that these boys, these young teenagers, are capable of consent, these relationships can be loving. And actually, if people would bother to study cultures throughout history in which homosexuality has been very well tolerated, if not approved, they will find the dominant form is between adult men and pubescent boys. And it's considered a rite of passage. The adult men are often married men. They didn't have this concept of a fixed sexual orientation.
Right.
So his views are very the ones that he stated and is maybe trying to retract. I don't know. It's unclear because people are not, at least I haven't heard, pinning him down about this distinction between pedophilia and sex between adults and sexually mature teens.
So basically what he's saying is sexual assault only comes in the instance of children who are sexually, like male children who are sexually molested by a male homosexual. So that's
exactly his
definition. But if it's a teenage boy, okay, teenage boy who can say yes or no, then it's not sexual assault in his book.
Right. Well, that's what he initially said. Then he came out and he made it clear that he objects to pedophilia. What he hasn't said is, does he now believe that pedophilia includes 13-year-old sexually mature boys or not?
Yeah.
Because most Americans, not making these distinctions between these ages, most Americans think that if you have a 13-year-old boy who has entered puberty and appears to give consent, they still view that as pedophilia.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'm not quite sure what.
And he's not
retracted.
Clarified. He's not clarified
exactly.
his situation.
I haven't heard a clarification of that.
Right, and he's kind of gone under the radar screen since he has been disinvited from CPAC last week. You know, if Milo had become the face, especially on college campuses, he had become the face of the conservative movement.
And that's one of the problems.
Exactly.
Is that as he has acknowledged himself publicly, he appeals to millennials.
Yeah.
You know, of course he appeals to millennials because we know that millennials, as a result of the constant drumbeat that espouses the normalization of homosexuality through everything that they've grown up with, their sitcoms, their movies, their music, everything that comes out of Hollywood, the publishing industry, the advertising industry, they've all heard one message. So as our young people, our millennials, are becoming more pro-life, they are at the same time becoming more pro-homosexual. So this Milo gives them permission
to
be Republicans while it's at the same time affirming sexually problematic ideology.
And I believe that as the young people are becoming more pro-life, I believe, because they've seen what has happened to their generation, the numbers that have been aborted, I believe, at least my hope is that down the road, maybe, you know, several decades, but I believe that they will begin to see the dangers of being involved in the homosexual and transgender lifestyles and how that has devastated their generation. I believe that they will, because look at the diseases that are associated with the homosexual lifestyle and the devastation of sex hormones and so-called sex change operations on young people who may change their mind down the road that they're really the sex that they are born.
Well, that's the really tragic group right now are these young children who are giving puberty blockers and then cross-sex hormones and even double mastectomies while they're minors. I've written an article, we haven't posted it yet, it's gone out in our newsletter, about the detransitioning movement. And these are not conservatives, at least the ones that I recounted in my story. And these are young people who, in fact, one girl said she still identifies as a butch lesbian. And she said, and now, but she doesn't believe in the so-called transitioning. And she said, and now I'm left with a scarred chest and a broken voice. She is in her early 20s. And has already had a double mastectomy.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that video. Yeah.
Yeah, and so when more of these people come out and the press has the courage and spine to cover these stories, then I think we will start to shift on this because people are going to start. The problem with our culture is all that matters anymore, argumentation, rationality, coherence no longer matters. All that matters are feelings.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So you have to have the compelling narratives. I think that's the reason why the pro-life movement is making headways, is you have this visual of the ultrasounds of babies that make for a compelling narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But with the homosexual movement, we haven't had that yet. I think it'll happen earlier with this whole trans movement because people's bodies are being mutilated. The unfortunate thing is where that is now moving is the left is increasingly saying you don't have to take, in fact, Barack Obama's edict to public schools that's been in the news lately,
mm-hmm.
in that edict, if people would bother to read it, it says that students should be able to access opposite-sex restrooms if they identify as the opposite sex. They don't have to take cross-sex hormones. They don't have to be cross-dressing. They don't have to be diagnosed as gender dysphoric. All they have to do is say that they are the opposite sex. So that's what's going to happen. But the transition movement includes all the, you know, the steroids and all that.
Right,
I think that's going to receive some criticism, and then it's going to turn into, we just have to say that we identify as the opposite sex. So the argument now that they use, well, you have these boys who actually look like girls,
mm-hmm.
and their disguises are so successful that women can't even tell.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to always be the case.
Well, that's true.
They're going to be men who look like men, dress like men, say they're women.
They continue looking like that no matter what they do to their physical body.
You've seen, I'm sure you have, seen men whose disguises are so elaborate, they've had so much surgery, you know, Adam's apple, cheek implants, the whole thing, that they can actually pass for women.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly with girls who've taken all this testosterone and are working out and had mastectomies, and they can, I mean, it's really grotesque.
Yeah, it is.
Because
that's what they've done to their bodies.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. In the name of progress, supposedly, or in the name of trying to become who they think they are. And it's all in their head. They're not, I mean, what they were born a boy or a girl, that's what they are. And no matter what they do to their bodies, no matter what kind of hormones they chunk into their bodies, it's not going to change the fact that their DNA is male or female.
That's right. And, you know, I have people say to me, okay, so you now have this woman who looks exactly like a man, are women going to want this woman in their restrooms? And I say, no, of course not. You know, I mean, but that's a problem that you created.
Yeah.
So the problem is now these people who are successfully masquerading mm-hmm. as others, they are the ones that should have to use single occupancy restrooms. And I don't know what they're going to do about locker rooms, but this is a problem of their own creation. So they'll say, well, you know, they've been using women's restrooms for years, these very few who actually can pass as women. And they're saying, since women didn't know, their argument is no harm, no foul. And I'll say, well, I want people to be clear on the analogy I'm using, and I'll clarify that in a second. If men can successfully peep on women using some sort of elaborate, you know, concealment devices, there is no harm done to the women. Let's say they just peep on them. They don't videotape them. They don't disseminate these, you know, any images.
Called peeping toms, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're voyeurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now, if women don't know about it, have they been harmed? I would say, yes, they have been harmed. And I want to be clear that I am not suggesting that gender dysphoric women or men are voyeurs. What I'm saying is their argument is if they can successfully deceive women and intrude into their safe spaces, then no harm has been done. And I'll say, well, then does that work with voyeurs? If
mm-hmm.
they can successfully conceal their voyeurism, has no harm been done?
That's a good question, because we had a situation up in northeastern PA just recently, I think last week, where there was an employee who they now think was an illegal alien. But anyway, he was caught in the pizza shop he worked at. He was caught videotaping women in the women's restroom. He got up into the ceiling somehow and was able to lift the tile or whatever and videotape women in the women's restroom. And a woman happened to see him last week. The authorities were called and such. But that's an excellent point, you know.
So someone might argue in that case, well, yeah, harm was done because he was videotaping, maybe he was disseminating. So what if he's just peeping?
Yeah.
And what if she hadn't caught him and realized that he was peeping? Then is it okay, no harm, no foul, because she didn't realize?
Yeah.
Because most women, like me, my daughters, we don't want to do our business in a stall with an unrelated man in the stall next to us.
Right.
Now they're making fun of us for that. They're saying, oh, as long as there's stalls, well, then why have we ever had single-sex restrooms
exactly.
with
that's,
dolls.
Yeah,
if it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman next to us, then why do we have them? And if they're saying that it's discriminatory if you have sex-segregated restrooms, locker rooms, showers, shelters, semi-private hospital rooms, then why have we ever had them? How in the history of this world have we never noticed that single-sex private facilities are discriminatory?
Well, they just know that the media is going to catch onto this whole discriminatory line, and the media is going to pump it up as to, you know, and buy into it that, yes, this is discriminatory. That's because they know the media is going to buy, the media is going to bite. That's why.
And
that's
so,
why they're
this
using
is
that.
What, this is what conservatives never do. They never put the left on the defensive by asking the hard questions. So, for example, in his edict that Barack Obama, what the left is essentially saying is restrooms, showers, locker rooms, shelters, because, by the way, he did a similar edict to HUD saying that
right.
women's and men's shelters have to be co-ed now, too. So what they're saying is restrooms and all these private spaces should no longer correspond to objective, immutable, biological sex, but to subjective feelings about sex. So the question is, if gender dysphoric persons should not have to use restrooms with those whose gender identity they don't share, then why should other people, I call them normal people,
yeah.
have to use restrooms and showers and shelters with people whose sex they don't share? Tell me. And also, the reinterpretation of Title IX and Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, that's what the left is using
mm-hmm.
to mandate co-ed restrooms.
And to completely reinterpreting it. We have a case, I'm going to just switch here to a situation here in Pennsylvania, which you wrote about on November 18th. It was an article dealing with Pine Richland. The judge just yesterday handed down a decision saying that these three students who identify as transgender can use the restroom and shower and locker rooms of their choice. So he's using the 14th Amendment in his argument. Now, this is just to put a stay on the existing prohibition of them using the opposite sex bathrooms that the school board passed back in September. And the judge says, well, we're just going to put a stay on that until this case works through the court system. But he's using the 14th Amendment, saying the 14th Amendment allows the school or mandates that the school must permit them to use the restroom of their choice. Which
How so? How does the 14th Amendment?
Well, that's my question. That's my question exactly. But that's what he's using. I mean, that's what they use for same-sex marriage with that decision. But the 14th Amendment has nothing to do with transgender, has nothing to do with homosexuals, sexual orientation, gender identity, none of that. But this judge, federal judge, is using the 14th Amendment.
Okay, so here's what they've now done. Let's say that I'm just going to go back to the using Title IX or Title VII, so what they're doing is they're reinterpreting the word sex, saying that sex includes gender identity. So here's what you have. You have this now, this reinterpretation says that with regard to bathrooms, let's say, in public schools, you have no right to discriminate based on sex, and you have no right to discriminate based on gender identity. They now let boys into the girls' restrooms because most of these students currently are boys.
Right.
And then, so what if another boy who's not gender dysphoric, the left will call them cisgender, cis boys, what if he says, well, I want to use the girls' restroom also? They can't say to him, you can't use it because you're a boy, because they've already let a boy in there.
Exactly.
And they can't say to him, well, you can't use it because you're not gender dysphoric or you're not trans, because they've now said the law prohibits discrimination based on gender identity.
Yeah.
So if you're cisgender, they can't discriminate. So there's no basis on which they can maintain sex-segregated facilities for any students in the school.
That's a good point.
That's where this is leading, and no one is talking about that.
Nope.
The left doesn't want to talk about it because they always want to approach this incrementally. Let's not worry about that. Just like when I would debate people on radio programs before same-sex marriage was legalized, and I would say, because they would say, marriage is just any relationship. It's defined by love between any two people.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and sex is irrelevant. And I said, why two people? And they were like, we're not talking about that.
not yet.
But there's implications. If you say it's just about who loves whom, then you have to explain. The conservatives know why there's two people, because there's two sexes.
Mm-hmm.
But the left, and so, but they didn't want to talk about that, because if they could just get it legalized, they don't really care if plural unions are legalized.
Exactly. That's, if they get their way, then they don't care what comes after that. That's quite
so the conservatives, the more moderate conservatives, would say, okay, fine, we'll go along with that, not realizing that plural marriages are now not possible, they're inevitable.
Yeah.
Because the
door's been
opened. Argumentation used by the left, there's no way you can prevent polyamorous couples or unions from using
now, it. Now, Obama's edict has been stopped. President Trump, the DOJ, DOE said we're not going to appeal. We're not going to carry forth the appeal that the Obama administration had started. But Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos, she initially did not agree with it. She wanted to have that edict stay in place. What are your thoughts, just briefly, what are your thoughts on her hesitation not to agree with the edict? Or the appeal of the edict?
Yeah, I'm very, very disappointed at this point. I would like Betsy DeVos gone.
Yeah.
Because it's not what's come out through all this is my understanding, and maybe I'm not up to date, was she didn't just balk at it, that there was a pretty strong opposition to the position, and that there was sort of an...
We will do this, and you will go along with
it. Yeah, or you're going to lose your position.
Yeah.
They had to sort of, I don't want to say threaten. And then throughout that whole thing, it came out that she apparently has been a long-time supporter of what are laughably called LGBT
rights. Yes, I found that out, too. I initially supported her, but now I do not.
Right.
Just because of what has been revealed in recent weeks, even.
People assume that because her family has been on the right side of truth regarding LGBT issues, that she was also, and that has been revealed that that is not true.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, how can folks contact you guys?
Go to illinoisfamily.org, and we also have a sister organization, Illinois Family Action, which is a 501c4, so we can address more directly political issues. But where I do all the writing on issues related to homosexuality and gender dysphoria is on illinoisfamily.org. I want to say one more thing about, if I have a moment, about Milo Yiannopoulos. Everyone is saying that the issue is just his, you know, imprecise language on pederasty and these two interviews exposed.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about him 18 months ago, having nothing to do with his position on pederasty.
Mm-hmm.
He says all sorts of foul, obscene, nasty, mean-spirited things that I think corrupt the Republican Party.
Yes, and absolutely. That has no place in the conservative movement in the Republican Party. That should not. I mean, look at the flack that Donald Trump got.
Oh, my gosh. And if when he appeared, and I have this in my recent article, Milo Yiannopoulos at a Gays for Trump campaign event in which during the entire thing, which people should look at it, we have a link to the video, just to see the photos on the wall behind him when he's speaking, which someone could argue he's not responsible for that. But during his entire interview, he would do these sexual asides to off-camera men.
Oh, really?
This is not the voice or face of conservatism, or it ought not be.
It should not be, that's for sure. Hey, Lori, thanks so much for the great articles you always write, and they can be found at illinoisfamily.org.
Yep.
And you guys keep up the good work and try to bring some sanity to that state.
You too. Thanks so much, Diane.
Hey, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.